Welcome back to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. Today, Pastor Tim walks us through a sensitive subject, but offers some advice on the container for one of life's most powerful experiences. As always, for more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, stick around after the message. And now, let's head over to Pastor Tim.
And if you're new with us, good morning, welcome. My name's Tim, and it's good to see you all. It is an honor always to be here and to be able to share some of this stuff with you. So thanks for giving some time up to be present and to worship with us. One quick announcement before we dive in. Actually, we're going to be in Song of Songs, chapter 4, if you want to find that, if you brought a Bible. But one quick thing to keep on your radar, or I should say one more thing, because we gave a handful of things already. On the 19th, so that's in 2 weeks, we are going to have a follow-up from our feedback gatherings that we had last spring. If you were present for those, we were asking questions about how do we move out of an interim season that we've been in with leadership, and that's as Harbor Churches. How do we move out of that? And so we have a follow-up on that. There's been a lot of work that's happened between now and then, and we are excited to share kind of some of the stuff and what's coming up next. And if you're able to show up for that and join us for that, that would be helpful because we take your feedback, questions, and all that really seriously. That meeting will be from 1 to 3 on the 19th. So 2 weeks from now, between 1 and 3, we likely will not need the full 2 hours, but we wanted to make sure we gave enough space just in case the conversation lingers. So October 19, 1 to 3, it will be fun, I think. So Lions don't play. I already checked. I think we have a Monday night or afternoon game, but not that time. We're going to be in Song of Songs, chapter 4. Once again this morning, this is week 5 now, if you're following along in our devotional. We are studying a 3,000-year-old erotic love poem that I believe is far more relevant now than it's ever been. It is more necessary now than it's ever been in the ways we think of things. Now, as Abby warned us, this is our last-minute, two-minute warning before we dive into some stuff that maybe you haven't had certain talks with your children that you might want to not have them in for, or it may prompt that talk. This week, honestly, the title is probably the most, we're not trying to be provocative, we're trying to be helpful. The title alone is probably the most, that's the thing. And so next week, however, we're going to get into some harder subjects around this. So really today it's looking at like kind of what is God's ideal for some of this? And then next week it's what happens when there's been a lot of pain, abuse, misuse injected into that. By the way, if you're curious what we're going to talk about in this series, our devotional, which I know I just walked out there, the table was empty. I threw some more back out there. So that's the last we have. So if you haven't grabbed one, that's it. But we really put all of the content in this one. Often with devotionals, we're asking the question of how much is too much? You want to save it for the sermon? And this one, we said, we want this to be the most practical we can make it. And so we'll just put as much of our sermon in here as we can. And so if you want to know exactly what we're talking about next week, you can find it right in here. And yeah. And also, very aware on a morning like today, where we're talking about this, and then especially next week, that for some of us, there is a lot of pain connected to this conversation. And in fact, for some, likely for many of you, this particular subject is a ton of pain, and not just in personal experiences, but in ways this was talked about in the past. And my hope, my sincere hope, is that you would find something in what we're talking about helpful to reframing it so that we can find God redeeming some of the places where we experience brokenness. And so that's my hope, but if we can do that well, obviously we're not going to be able to talk about all the things. This is a big subject, but we'll do our best. So this is my 3-second warning. Okay, 2-minute warning over. This morning, as our title would suggest, this morning I want to talk about sex, and I want to talk about sex in the ways that the scriptures talk about it. The Bible holds a very elevated view of sex. It's not a diminished view. It is quite high. And the reason we want to talk about what the Bible says is, A, it's kind of a part of human life, and B, we really want to be able to spot the frauds. Do you remember the movie Catch Me If You Can? This is dating me a little bit. Catch Me If You Can. It was Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks, and Leonardo DiCaprio was, there's a scene where he's counterfeiting money, and he's quite good at it. And Tom Hanks works for the government, and he's got to figure out if it's counterfeit or not counterfeit. And there's this moment in the movie where the way he determines whether this is real money or not real money is he holds Leonardo DiCaprio's counterfeit money up against real money. Because what we know from people in that industry is if you want to spot a fake or a counterfeit or a fraud, the best way to do it is by holding up the real thing up against it. And one of the things I love about Song of Songs is what it's trying to do is hold an elevated, maybe even an idealized version of love and marriage so that we can spot any areas of our own lives, of our own histories that might have bought into some counterfeit lies. So that's what this is doing. And the goal of Song of Songs is that you would read it and you would walk away from it thinking, I want that. I want that kind of marriage. I want that kind of relationship. I want that kind of life moving forward. So my premise for those who tune out after the first 30 seconds, that's my fault, not yours. So I'll just give you my premise so you at least get all the content and then you can listen in if you want. But chapter 4 is the honeymoon. That's what we're going to look at. What happens on the honeymoon? You can expect what happened on the honeymoon, and it's in quite vivid detail in our text. But my premise this morning is that sex is good. Sex is good. It's God's idea. God made sex good. Pleasure is good. That is also God's idea. God made sex pleasurable. That is who our God is. God could have allowed us to bring life into the world and restore kind of our vows in marriage, something much more difficult. God chose this path. Sex is good, sex is pleasurable, and sex is powerful, and sex is sacred. And because of that, because of this goodness and yet sacredness of sex, there are certain there are certain ways that sex can get misused, and certain boundaries or guardrails you'd want to place around sex that the Bible again and again says, oh yeah, that boundary is covenant. That container is covenant. So that's my premise in a nutshell. Here's the tension of talking about any of this. How on earth do you talk about this? Right? Like how? There's a pendulum that's swung in culture. When I grew up in the 90s, I was a teenager in the 90s, and in the 90s, the dominant Christian way of talking about this particular issue was purity culture. I Kiss Dating Goodbye, if you remember that, the True Love Waits campaign. There was like a whole marketing machine around the True Love Waits stuff, and this marketing machine created t-shirts and bracelets, and there was a True Love Waits study Bible that was around when I was a kid that somehow made every single verse of the Bible somehow about sex. That existed. That was the pendulum. Now, that was over, that was like 90s. I think the intentions were really good. I actually think there were people that understood how the misuse of sex has caused such tremendous amounts of pain. And so in a way of trying to help young people, that kind of, the pendulum went there. However, I was leaving high school, went to college, and then I was a college pastor while I was in seminary, and what my experience was as a college pastor was how much shame and hiddenness, and like people just refusing to talk about this, that particular culture created. And so there had to be a better way to do that. But because the church, I think, rightfully recognized we didn't cover that one exactly great, the pendulum swung, and in the void of being able to talk about it, we allowed Tinder to fill in the blanks. And now we've moved into kind of the Tinder culture, where it's just swipe, 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 swipe. And in many ways, the way people talk about sex today is just quite casual. Casual sex, that's a weird phrase, isn't it? Who's familiar with the show Friends? Of course you are. Friends is, it was big again when I was in high school. It was big. Now, admittedly, it's often quite funny. Just want to acknowledge that. It's often quite funny, and I would not use the show Friends to set your moral compass. Okay, so both of those can be true. In season two of the show Friends, came out in 1996, there is a dialogue that I find quite revealing. It takes place between Monica, one of the main characters, and her friend Richard. It goes like this. Monica, hesitant but curious. So are you saying we could actually just be friends who happen to sleep together? Richard, smiling, calm. Yeah, why not? We're adults. We can handle it. Monica, half laughing. You make it sound so casual, like grabbing a coffee or Richard. Exactly, just another activity we do together, like playing racquetball. Like playing racquetball. That's what makes this conversation so difficult, right? Like the pendulum was here, and then the pendulum swung, and in its place, the Tinder culture filled in. And we see some of the damage this caused, and I think we're all aware of the damage that this is causing. And the hard part of the conversation is, how do we have this particular conversation better? How do we talk about this? Honestly, as a pastor, this is what I've been wrestling with, because I recognize how much pain we all have experienced in this particular area. And how do we talk about this in a way that doesn't add more shame and pain, but at the same time believes that the gospel is true and that Jesus can restore whatever brokenness we bring to the foot of the cross? How do we do both that? I'm really quite grateful that Song of Songs is in our Bible, because I think what Song of Songs does is it elevates a relationship, it elevates a marriage, and it allows us to spot the frauds. God apparently cares enough about this, as you'll see, that he devotes an entire chapter to a pretty vivid depiction of the wedding night. Okay, I feel tension in the room. How are we? All right, little bit of recap. Let's back up a minute. Chapter one of Song of Songs, we find the two meeting each other for the first time. We've got he, we've got she, and we've got friends. We find he and she meet each other. She has the first words, and her first words are, I'm attracted to him. I would like to kiss him. So we got some attraction there. Then you get to chapter two, and now it is like, so chapter one, it's like the whole thing is a perspective of an older couple looking back on what first attracted them to each other. That's a way to read it. That's kind of how we're reading it. It's poetry, so there's other ways to read it. But you get to chapter two, and it's like this couple has begun dating, and you find all of the language of dating in chapter two. Lines like this, verse five of chapter two, things heat up quite quickly, you'll see. She says, strengthen me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. His left arm is under my head, and his right arm embraces me. In layman's terms, they're spooning. Faint with love. Do you remember this phase of dating? The faint with love stage? By the way, raisins, culturally at this time, were thought to be aphrodisiacs. Put that on a box of Raisin Bran. It'll sell. Married couples, do you remember the early days? Like the rose-colored glasses? No one has ever loved. No two people have ever existed that loved each other like we love each other. The faint with love phase. Like there's this electricity in the air in this particular moment. His left arm is under me. His right arm is over me. And then we get a line. And this line is critical to the entire psalm, our song. This line comes up again and again and again in the song. This is the line, verse 7, right after the spooning, we read, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, so she's referring to her friends, my friends, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires, until it's ready. Translation is, don't just rush into it. Don't rush into intimacy. Don't rush into especially physical intimacy. Your soul, your heart, your body, be careful with those. Don't just rush into it. Don't rush into it until, as she says, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires, until it can handle it. That line comes up three times in Song of Songs. It comes up in this passage for the first time. It comes up again right before their wedding. Things get hot and heavy again, and it comes up again. And then it comes up a third time. This one's interesting. It comes up in the end of the book, in chapter 8. And most people think that this is likely the moment they're about to have kids, which is interesting. But twice of the three times, it's when things are physically getting a bit steamy. And they pump the brakes. They say, whoa, 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 whoa. We got to slow down. We got to pause. We got to pump the brakes. Do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. It's not just racquetball. In other words, so chapter 1, they meet. There's attraction. Chapter 2, they begin dating. Chapter 3, it's the kind of the heat of the dating. In chapter 3, they're gonna get married at the end of chapter 3. But you have all the early day fights. Like while they're dating, they're kind of learning each other. In verse 1, we read, all night long on my bed. We worked through this one a couple weeks ago. All night long on my bed, I looked for the one my heart loves. I looked for him but did not find him. I will get up now and go about the city through its streets and its squares. I will search for the one my heart loves. So I looked for him, but I did not find him. That longing of, is he going to be there when I need him? And then it quickly pivots to all this talk of weddings. And if this was a movie, you can kind of see the scene, right? Like, it's like she's waiting for him. Is he going to show up? And then running through a hay field comes Ryan Gosling, and he's there just at the end, right? So that's this moment. Verse 6, who is this coming up from the desert like a column of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and incense, made from all the spices of the merchant? Look, it's Solomon's carriage, escorted by 60 warriors. And then if you continue, they'll talk about the day of my wedding. His head was crowned. So he's coming to claim his bride. He's coming. She sees him coming. And you read this, and if you're like me, when I read this, I'm like, I know this story. I've heard this story. I know this story. If you're thinking to yourself, wait a minute, why do I know this? Why do I know this? Let me help. There's a modern day poet that basically just ripped off chapter 3. Almost to the language of chapter 3 of Song of Songs, this modern day poet, quite a popular poet of the modern era, ripped off this particular language in a way that I find it quite helpful and quite accessible. Let me show you just a clip from... So ridiculous. I've been feeling so alone. I keep waiting for you, but you never come. Is this in my head? I don't know what to think. He knelt to the ground and pulled out a ring and said, marry me, Juliet. You never have to be alone. I love you, and that's all I really know. I talk to your dad, go pick out a white dress. It's a love story, baby. Just say yes. There you go. That's for you Swifties out there. So I had a busy week, admittedly, and so I reached out to Jeremy Cruz, you know Jeremy, Pastor Jeremy, and I said, Jeremy, hey, from this point in the video to this point, you're good with technology, would you kind of cut the music video for me? And he goes, absolutely. He gave it to me, and he goes, I made a couple edits. So you can thank him for that. But am I not right that that is chapter 3? It's like, where are you? I'm tired of waiting. And then all of a sudden she sees him coming. And who is this coming like a cloud of smoke? Then they get married. This is where we pick up the story. Chapter 4, you're never going to hear that again in the same way. You're going to remember Song of Songs. That's the goal. Old school Taylor. Chapter 4, there's a wedding. Then there is a marriage. And by the time you get to chapter 4, we have what many people say, like, just is likely the wedding night. This is the honeymoon. And everything you would think would be in that description is in that description. This is quite intimate. It almost feels like we shouldn't be reading this. This isn't for us. But I want to read a bit of it to you. I want you to see just how intimate the language is. We have him, and he's going to praise her, and he's going to work his way down from the top of her head on down. We'll stop it at a certain point, but It is in there. After all of the restraining, after all of the pumping the brakes, do not arouse or awaken love, not until it's ready. Now we have the wedding night. And he says, how beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn coming up from the washing. Each has its twin. Not one of them is alone. Some things get lost in translation. I don't recommend saying to the love of your life, your hair is like a flock of goats. You have all your teeth. I find that neat. He goes on, your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of pomegranates. Your neck is like the Tower of David built with elegance. On it hang 1,000 shields, all of them shields of warriors. Your two breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle that browse among the lilies. And he just works his way down. And why I find this helpful is it's not the sick and twisted and perverted language that we find in our culture. Turn on any radio station. See how women are described by so many of our modern-day poets. Notice the language. Notice how much we objectify or commodify people's bodies. And what you find here is he is talking about her body. But he's trying to figure out what is the most beautiful things I can think of. And then he says to her, and you're better than that, and you're better than that, and you're better than that. There's a real thing and there's a counterfeit. Guys, we can be this. We can be this for our spouses. You can be this for somebody you're dating. You can become the kind of man, if you're single, who can become this. We can be this. And women, you can have this. You are worth more than just to be some trophy of some jerk to brag about to his friends. You're worth more than that. It's the real picture. And it helps expose some of the lies. Do not arouse or awaken love. They've said this. They've said it twice at this point. And now it's the wedding night. They recognize this is just a little bit bigger than racquetball here. We're dealing with something bigger than just racquetball. And now we're going to get the moment. And just brace yourself for the moment. This is the moment where he's going to work his way down her body. And then we are going to get this. She says, verse 16. Awake, north wind, and come, south wind. Blow on my garden that its fragrance may spread everywhere. Let my beloved come into his garden and taste its choice fruits. Do you need me to explain that? So, what's really interesting, though, with that language is she talks about her body as a garden, and if you read the early portion, she refers to her garden as a garden locked up. My garden is mine to give. And now she says, come into your garden, right? It's this moment where she's saying, we've pumped the brakes. I've said no multiple times, and now let's go, I guess. Chapter 5, he responds, I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. The language of sister and bride is weird to me, but different times. I have gathered my myrrh and my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. In other words, he really likes gardening. He's a fan. And then we have a line. So after this moment, right, this is the moment. The marriage has been consummated. We have this moment, and then there's a line. And this line has bothered translators because this particular line is a little bit different than the rest of the book Song of Songs. And so the earliest translators, the Jewish rabbis, many of them made the argument that this next line is God's only line in the love poem. Like God has one line and this is that line. Now, whether that's how it was intended to be read or not, I do think it's helpful. This is the line, potentially from God. Eat, friends, and drink. Drink your fill of love. In other words, God says, I'm in. This is why I created that. This is why sex is good and it's beautiful and it's sacred. And this is how it was meant to be treated. It is not racquetball. It's so much better than racquetball. It's so much more powerful than racquetball. God, when it comes to this particular subject, is not a killjoy. God is not someone who just wants you to set boundaries because he doesn't want you to have fun. God wants you to understand what's worth, like what you could have, what you should have. So how do we get here? How do we like get to this place? I think the secret is hidden in plain sight. It's actually not hidden at all. It's the love poem is trying to help us see this. It comes up three times. There's a line. We've teased the line already. But the line, do not arouse or awaken love until it so desires. Do not arouse or awake. I think the secret to understanding the whole poem and how do we, like, I think it's hidden in that line. Later, when this couple is much older, chapter 8, there's this moment where she's going to describe love. And this is the moment that is often read in weddings for good reason. It's a beautiful line. And now we have an older couple, and she's trying to explain what she's experienced in her whole life. And she's trying to explain love. And she says this. She says, place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death. Its jealousy is unyielding as the grave. It burns like blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Love, she says, is like a blazing fire, like a mighty flame. When I was in college, my senior year of college, a video came out, and this is kind of the pendulum was here, the pendulum moved here, and there was a video that came out that I found to be really helpful looking at just this particular, this language of flame and this language of fire. Love is like a mighty, mighty flame. In English, when we talk about love, we really have one word for love, and we use that word really widely, right? We'll say things like, I'll say things like, I love my kids, I love my wife, and I love the Detroit Lions. And like, I use the same word as though that's the same thing, as though those two loves are the same. In the Hebrew that the Old Testament's written in, and this song is written in the Hebrew there are three words for love, and they're not the same. The idea being, if you consider each of these like a small flame, when these three come together, that is God's picture for what love could be within a marriage or a relationship. The first word for love is the word raya. Raya is the kind of love, it's like friendship love. Raya is the kind of love that exists between two friends. Raya is about connection of friends. Raya is not just we love each other, but we actually really like each other. We enjoy each other. We have hobbies together. We like sharing things together. We laugh a lot together. Raya. Raya is love. Then there is ahava. And ahava is like a commitment kind of love. Ahava is the unconditional love. It's the kind of love you make when you make your vows. Ahava is, I will not leave you no matter what. That's ahava. And then the third kind of love is the word dod. And dod is the physical or sexual love. Dod is passion. Dod is desire. Dod is physical intimacy between two people. So in our song, we read that love is like a mighty flame. And it's like there's all these three flames. So here's my not that helpful metaphor. And these three flames are good. But after, I don't know, 15 seconds, it burns out. Love is like a flame. And so you got the dod flame. And the dod flame is powerful, and it burns out. And then you've got the ahava flame. And the ahava flame, you can light the ahava flame, but without the dod and without the raya, it burns out. And you have these three flames, but when they come together, now, to use the language of the psalm, we have a mighty flame, a roaring fire. I remember hearing that, and that made a lot of sense to me. You've seen couples that, here's why it made sense. You've seen couples that have a whole lot of raya, right? They're friends, and they clearly have a really good friendship. They love hanging out with each other. They have a lot of shared interests, but there is no spark. There's no like tension there. Like there's no passion there. There's no commitment there. They're friends. But like they could share a mortgage, they can share a kitchen, they can share separate sides of the bed, but yet you have this sense that like there's gotta be more than that. You need raya in marriage, but you need more than just raya. Married couples, that's true, right? Not sure. The second is you've seen couples like this too. They have a lot of ahava. They are committed. They're the kind of couple who will say, we will never get a divorce, and they will never use the word divorce, and you believe them. And they will not get a divorce. They're in it for the long haul. And you're not quite sure if they want to be. Right? Like, there's not much dode there. There's not much passion there. And there's also, they're not really friends either. They kind of just share a space. And they share a commitment. Like, we're going to raise these kids together. It's good. It's a good commitment. And it's got to be more than that. You need ahava, but you need more than ahava to have that true love. Then the last one is dode. You've met couples that have an abundance of dode, right? They love doting. They love it. They're like magnets to each other. They are like when you see them, like PDA is not a problem for them. The rest of us would love for you to tone it down, but it's not a problem. And they are constantly at each other. Like there is a spark there that everyone can see. And every once in a while, she wonders if he will move on from her and find somebody else, and if she's going to be back on her own. And every once in a while, he wonders if as soon as this were to go away, is it back to square one? You need dode, but full, passionate, enduring love needs more than just dode. When the three come together, we have what the text says is a mighty flame. Now, stay with me on this. This particular mighty flame, you can't just light it anywhere. So you put the three together, and now it's powerful, right? Now we got a mighty flame. But you can't just light that. It needs a container. It needs a fireplace. It needs a place for the fire to go. And throughout our Bible, the place for the fire to go, the word that we find in our scriptures is the word covenant. Covenant. The Bible talks about two different kinds of relationships people have. We have contract, and we have covenant. Contract is an exchange, probably the best way I can think to explain it. It's the exchange of goods or services. You rent an apartment. You give this much money for the apartment space. They give you the apartment. You have a signed document that says we're in this. That's contract. Covenant is an exchange of persons. Think adoption. You do sign a document, you do some paperwork, but it's not about the document. That's not why you raise that child. You raise that child because that's your child. When it comes to this particular conversation, far too many people treat sex as contractual. It's an exchange of goods or services. Far too many people treat marriage as contractual, right? I have to be there to sign a document. You sign a document. You have some witnesses that sign a document. And Uncle Sam says, congratulations, you're married. And we also have a process where we can end that marriage if we want. Covenant is different. And what you find in the scriptures is, again and again, the place to hold the fire. Because love is a mighty flame. The place to hold the fire is what the Bible calls covenant. Two people in this forever. Two people committing. Two people where all three of the flames are committed to watching all of them grow. That's the place. Love is a mighty flame. Let me stretch that metaphor just a little bit. Fire is amazing, right? We need fire. Michigan winters would be really hard for our great-grandparents to have survived without fire. Fire gives light. Fire gives warmth. Fire is good. But fire is dangerous. If your house gets cold, you don't just say, well, let's just stack some wood in our living room and light a fire. We all know that that would just lead to chaos. It would burn a whole lot down. Fire needs appropriate boundaries so that that fire can continue to grow and actually continue to provide heat and light for others. Okay. That fire needs some boundaries. Fire is necessary, it's good, and it's powerful, and it needs a container, it needs a place. God's design is, okay, I've given it a place. I've given it a place. Watch this couple. See how they've committed. I've given it a place. In Tim language, don't just go lighting fires everywhere. It's not helpful. It's not helpful, and it'll hurt you. It will hurt you. It'll hurt you. I noticed a pattern when I was a college pastor. I saw two kinds of problems. All the problems had the same kind of source, by and large. Most people's problem was a relationship that ended. The amount of on-the-job training was just, okay, you're going to deal with people who are going to go through a breakup. But I noticed there was two different kinds of breakups. There was a breakup where somebody would come in and they would describe the breakup and they were heartbroken. This is somebody that they cared about and that relationship is over. And it was hard. And then there was another couple or another kind of person who would go through a breakup. And when they would describe their breakup, it was so devastating to them. They couldn't imagine life going on. They could not imagine. It was like gut-wrenching. There was a couple of young people that when I talked to them, I honestly was worried that they might harm themselves because of how gut-wrenching. And I noticed a pattern. As they began to tell their story, almost always, the couples who could not imagine life going on were the couples who this was their first sexual partner. Something happens. It's powerful. It is powerful. But it needs an appropriate container, because when it's not in the appropriate container of covenant, it hurts us. Why does God give that kind of language? Because God actually cares. We'll talk more about that next week. But that's also true for Raya, friendship, right? It's not innocent to say, well, you know, like, I'm just going out to coffee with her. She just listens. She gets me. No big deal, honey. No big deal. It's not a big deal. We're not sleeping together. It's just coffee. It's just, he just gives me affection and attention I don't get at home. But it's not physical. No big deal. You know that's not true, right? And you know it's not true because it's lighting the Raya flame outside of the fireplace of covenant. You're giving the flame to someone else, and it causes all kinds of damage. It's also true for Ahava. Ahava, the commitment love. Many of us, the biggest barrier we have with the commitment love is work, right? It's like our jobs. I remember when I first became a pastor, I was single. And I had a conversation with an older pastor who said something that I quite frankly found weird. I was like, why are we, that's weird. But here's what he said, and it made a lot of sense. It makes sense to me now. But he said to me, he goes, Tim, the hardest part about being a single pastor is if you get married, someday you're going to have to kick the church out of your bed. That was weird to me. It's like, they're not in my bed, sir. That's weird to me. Now I get what he means. I get what he means. He's like, when you're a single pastor, you can give them every night. You can give them every weekend. You can give them all of your time. But ahava, that flame, that's hers once you get married. You can't give up every night. That is cheating on your spouse. You can't do that. The fire has to stay in the fireplace. And far too many people say, well, that's work. And the fire is in the wrong place. And God's container, he says again and again, is covenant. Which brings us back to sex. Sex is good. Sex is powerful. God doesn't give boundaries around sex because God's a killjoy. That's not who our God is. God created the activity. He could have created it in other ways. This is how God created how a husband and wife can come together. This is how God created a covenant. This is God's idea. But Dod needs the other two flames. Dod, sex, needs the other two flames. On its own, it's not a mighty fire. On its own, it just burns. It just hurts. It needs the other two. The Bible takes this more seriously than we do. God seems to take this more seriously than we do. I think we need to take it seriously. The reason why you would ever restrain yourself is not because God says, thou shalt not, thou shalt not, thou shalt not. What God you find in the scriptures again and again is saying, actually, I want you to. And the Bible is far less concerned with thou shalt not as it is thou shalt. I want you to have the fullest, most beautiful, most life-giving experience you can have. And every once in a while, you find yourself in a spot where you have to pump the brakes and say, let's not arouse or awaken this love until it can handle it. All right, let's get really practical, and then we'll wrap up. Really practical. There are some questions in your devotional that I'm asking you, please, on this particular week, look through. If you're dating, it's a big deal to look through them. If you are single, it's maybe even more important. And if you are married, highly encourage looking through these. The language I find helpful around this is, in addition to that, is language of guidepost and guardrails. So guidepost is a thing that sits out in your future that you're aiming at. How can you spot the counterfeit? You have a vision in your head of what you're looking for in life. What kind of marriage you want in life? Like, what are you after? And then, so that's your guidepost. And then you have guardrails. How do we make sure our life is pointed in that direction? You could call them boundaries. I like guardrails better, but you can call them boundaries. What are the things we have to put in place now so that we are staying out of the gutters? How do we get there? If you're single, dating, or married, especially single or dating, it is so important that you have guardrails. It is so important, and you need to be really specific. Not just with yourself. You need to be real. If you're in a relationship, you need to share your guardrails. You have to talk about this stuff. And if he's pushing you on your guardrails or on your boundaries, you gotta leave. Like, you need somebody who actually cares about you enough, respects you enough, honors you enough, that if you say, this is my guardrail, they honor you in that. If he can't do that, or if she can't do that, then his name is not like perfume poured out. He is not providing shade for you, and you got to get out. Be really, really clear. Really, really clear. And you need to fight together on this one. Like, you need those moments where you're feeling weak in this particular area for him to be strong or her to be strong. And in the moments where they're feeling weak, you step up and you can be strong. You got to fight together. There's a lie that somehow crept in to our culture that guys' job is to pursue and women's job is to kind of gatekeep or goalie tend, right? Like that, it's just not true. It's not, like, we need two people who are both defending each other's guardrails. So if you're single or dating, make sure you've had that conversation. If they can't honor it, it's okay. There's other people. You'll be okay. You will be okay. You will be okay. You are worth that. You are worth that. If you're single or dating and if you're married, it is your responsibility to make sure all three of these loves grow, not just one. It is your responsibility to make sure that fire has got the kind of commitment or covenant. Just because he says, I'm in this, or just because she says, I'll love you forever, honey. Like, just because they say that doesn't mean that I've sat with too many young people who could not envision life going on. We don't want that for you. We don't want that for you. If you're married, it is also your responsibility. This is speaking to me too. Is there any of those three flames that have just not been tended to? The friendship flame, like, is it grown dim? Go on a date night. Go on a vacation together. Do whatever you can to light that one back up. Is it the commitment flame? If you're not comfortable with somebody else reading your text messages or your email or knowing where you are, the commitment flame needs to come back up. Or is it the dode, like the passion, the sex flame? We should be able to talk about this with our spouse. They're our spouse. I know a lot of spouses aren't talking about this, but you should be able to talk about sexual expectations. You should be able to talk about pleasure. You should be able to talk about this. If you're married, please talk about this. So many marriages end because couples can't talk about this. Have a conversation. That's why we put this together. It's an attempt to try to help have that conversation. If you have kids, we need to model this for our kids. We need to model what a healthy love looks like, where all three are present. Our kids, we know this, our kids are listening less to what we say than to how we treat their mother or their father. It is important. And of course, we should be talking to our kids too, right? We should talk to our kids about sex. We should talk to our kids about boundaries or guardrails. We should not be ashamed of this. They're the kids, we're the adults, right? We should not be ashamed to have these conversations. They will mimic our shame. If we come in with a bunch of shame to this conversation, they will mimic shame on this area. So come in, address questions, do your best. But then far more important than that is, how do you talk about their mother, or how do you talk about their father, and how do we model love is like a mighty flame? How do we kind of give our kids a guidepost to say, you can have this? Because if we don't do it, they will lower their own bar of expectation. Next week, we will talk about some hard stuff. If this wasn't hard, I don't know if this was hard for you or not. But next week, we'll talk about some hard stuff. And I recognize in the conversation next week, statistically, some of the stuff that I just think the church needs to talk about, all the stuff, and the Bible certainly does. Statistically, for some of you, this may be so close to home that next week you may elect to watch online. We would understand that. But especially when it comes to things like abuse, rape, those kinds of things. Just want to give you a heads up. Please, I don't want you to get caught off guard. But let's have a word of prayer. Father, Lord, we thank you that every good and perfect gift is a gift from you. Lord, we thank you that that you care about the things that we stay awake over. And Lord, we thank you that you actually have really helpful advice. And Lord, we also confess that so often we have turned to other voices to find advice on this stuff and not to you. And Lord, I confess on behalf of the organized church, we have not done a great job with this conversation. We pray that somehow in the midst of this week, the next couple, Lord, that you would remind us that the gospel is even better than we are able to explain it, that grace is even more abundant than we've experienced. So God, would you begin the process of healing? We pray this in your name. And everybody said.
For more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, find us on the web at www.southharbor.org or find us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. And on Sunday mornings, you can find our service streamed live at 8:45 a.m. on Facebook and YouTube. And so from all of us here at South Harbor Church and the Harbor Churches, we want to wish you a blessed week.